The final state in our State of the Union series is not a state at all, but the District of Columbia. Joining me now to discuss Washington, D.C., and its three electoral votes is David Nakamura, a D.C. city government reporter for The Washington Post. I'm very pleased to welcome him to the show today. Hi, David.
Hey, thanks for having me.
John Kerry won 89% of the vote in Washington, D.C. in 2004. Al Gore won 85% in 2000. What makes the city vote so heavily Democratic?
Well, it's funny because the seat of power, as you know, and it, you know, people think of federal Washington as gridlocked by partisanship, but you know, this city has been largely African American. There's a long history of Democratic, you know, ideals, and there should be no suspense today as well. The mayor here, who's a young, a biracial mayor, endorsed Obama back a year and a half ago, and it's been pretty much a downhill coast ever since. Obama easily dominated in February against Hillary Clinton, and you know, the mayor was out, just I was just with him at a voting precinct. Long lines here. Even though it's wrapped up, people want to have their say.
Do you think it'll have an effect on the races for the two at-large seats on the city council?
Well, what's interesting and what people may not know is that there's a law here in D.C. that says that there must be two seats on the council that do not go Democratic. Otherwise, all 13 would. Usually there's 11 Democrats, and right now there's one Republican incumbent who's fighting for her life. She lost in the primary in September, but she, again, that seat has to go to a non-Democrat. And what's happened here is the other at-large seat is going to go easily to the Democratic incumbent, but the other seat, which again by law cannot, is being fought over by a bunch of independents who were Democrats. So it could be that DC is down to basically just one non-independent come this fall. And you know, the Congress created that law to sort of make some, you know, sort of, you know, balance somehow to have some say from a minority party, but otherwise it's pretty much a clean sweep.
Well, Congress pretty much ran the city until 1973. D.C. voters didn't have the right to elect a mayor and a city council.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, one of the big issues for Mayor Fenty when he was trying to figure out who to endorse, he, you know, was voting rights. D.C. is still not completely out of Congress's oversight, the federal government's oversight, and, you know, there's still hoping to get a, you know, congressional seat, which would be, you know, maybe a political future for the mayor here, but looking down the road, because there is no other you know, way to go. But, and, you know, so Congress does have its say. You know, in the mid-90s, when the city ran out of money, Congress pretty much took over then again. So that's sort of, you know, something that gets on people's nerves here and is one of the bigger issues, actually, than Obama has said, promised the mayor that he'd support it if indeed he's elected.
Well, Mayor Fenty won his 2006 race with 89% of the vote. He had represented the 4th Ward and the city council. Did he use that post effectively to launch his mayoral bid?
Absolutely. As a council member, he really made a name for himself in a couple ways. Number one, he was very much on the leading edge of, you know, the BlackBerry generation. He has three of them now, but he really responded to people in a way people hadn't seen before. He, you know, he won his council seat by, you know, upsetting in the longtime incumbent by going door to door. That's one of the big strategies here. He did that again. Mayor did a 2-year campaign, almost like Obama, in that he, you know, started way early and really, you know, beat the pavement and sort of walked around the city introducing himself. But and as a council member, the other big thing he did was the D.C. government was trying to decide whether to build a baseball stadium for the Expos at the time and now the Nationals, and use $600 million in public money. And this mayor, as council member, voted against it, which was somewhat unpopular in the region with the suburbs really wanting baseball, but was popular as sort of a, you know, populist move here in D.C., where a lot of people, you know, think the city should have spent that money on other things, other priorities. And so he went against the baseball stadium. They built it anyway because he was on the losing side. But and as mayor, he sort of has been more supportive, but certainly made a name for himself on the council by doing that.
One of those three BlackBerries is reserved for communicating with the D.C. police commissioner. Mm-hmm. Is crime as much of a problem in D.C. now as it's been in the past?
Well, if you go way back, certainly murders are well down, as they are nationally, you know, from the peak of 400 a year. They're down to about 220-some or 230. A year, but it has creeped back up. The mayor appointed a somewhat unique pick as a police chief, a 39-year-old woman who hadn't even graduated high school initially, of course went back and got degrees and so on, and Kathy Lanier, you know, a woman, a white woman in a predominantly, you know, black city, you know, in a department that had always been run by men. She's been somewhat popular in certain areas, but she is grappling with a number of big issues, and there was a spate of violence in Ward 5 here, you know, and in the summer, and it was a very controversial move by the mayor and his chief. They set up some police checkpoints, which were challenged in court on, you know, civil rights issues because, you know, drivers were being stopped in this neighborhood by police saying, you know, we need to stop drive-by shootings by people who don't live in the neighborhood. And if you didn't live there, you were turned away a couple weekends. And so it was very controversial. They've credited it with actually stemming some of the real violence there. But people are still, some people are very unhappy that it happened.
Early this year, Washington, D.C.'s handgun ban was struck down by the Supreme Court. Is the city trying to devise another handgun control bill, one that might be more acceptable to the current Supreme Court?
Right now, they've worked on a registration plan where you can you must register, and they are actually saying that you can have a handgun to comply with the law. They're trying to have some other kind of measures to control and sort of monitor them, but frankly, they don't really see a way to get back to as stringent a law as they had. They had one of the most strict in the nation where they basically all handguns were banned. And now, you know, you have to keep them in your house. You know, you can only use them in self-defense and so on. And, there's some very strict regulation in terms of registering them. And so far, I don't think any dealer has been able to sort of open shop yet either in D.C., so it's still being worked out.
The District of Columbia has the highest education spending levels in the country, and yet enrollment seems to decline every year. Is that the reason that the mayor wanted to have control of the public schools?
Absolutely. I mean, he has two twins who are not in public school. They're third grade. He says he will send them to public school next year. Everybody's waiting to see what he's going to do. Charter schools are a big initiative here. And people have been grappling with what to do with schools here for ages. The school's enrollment is down to 45,000. They're losing 5,000 kids a year. They used to have 80,000 kids just, 10 years ago in the system. And the mayor, he decided in the first day in office to say he would launch a takeover effort, get rid of the school board. Essentially, he did that. He used all his capital. He won every precinct when he won office, and he used all that capital to take over the schools. And he appointed a young chancellor of school named Michelle Rhee, who had a very untraditional background and never been basically a teacher for a few years for Teach for America. But other than that, had never been a principal and so on. And she's very controversial as well. And she is really, making a name for herself by really trying to do some dramatic things like, get rid of tenure for teachers and so on. But right now she's in a fight with the union and the mayor. This is the biggest initiative. And so far, he's basically patterned it after what's happening in New York City with Joel Klein and Mayor Bloomberg. And it's really a model. But again, this is his biggest political initiative. And if it works, it could really launch him, to another easy term. If it doesn't, we'll see, but it will take a few more years.
Is running Washington complicated by the fact that all legislation passed by the D.C. government remains subject to congressional approval?
It can be a problem.
If Congress is going through some turmoil, what happens to just the daily running of Washington, D.C.?
Usually it's not a problem. I mean, again, 10 years ago when there was a control board that the Congress installed, that was a real problem. But now, the budget usually is attached to another bill and it rides through, but there was an issue in the mayor taking over the school board, and they had to change the law basically to say the school board no longer had the power, and the power is vested in the mayor to name the superintendent or chancellor. That happened in the spring, and actually was held up for a while. No one was sure because the Senate can, do some sort of anonymous holding up of the bill. Turned out it was held up once by a senator in Michigan who was upset that the city didn't have meters and taxis. They used a unique zone system, and this senator didn't like it. He held up the bill for a while, the school bill, because to get the mayor's attention. Another senator, Senator Landrieu from Louisiana, also held up the school bill because she was unhappy with some other things. And so you can see how this goes, and it really does get in the craw of many people here in D.C., and the mayor has certainly paid lip service and more maybe to try to fix and overturn the Congress's control, at least get a seat in the House.
Well, right now, what you have is a delegate to the House who cannot serve on a committee, Eleanor Holmes Norton, pretty well known in this country, running for her 10th term, and I'm assuming that she remains popular. But what about that bill in Congress last year that would have added two seats, one for D.C. and one for Utah? Mm-hmm. It passed the House, but then it didn't make it through a Senate filibuster. Does it stand a better chance of passing in the next Congress if the Democrats can gain a filibuster-proof majority?
Well, that's what they think. I mean, there's still some who doubt it, but they felt like they came as close as they ever have this past go-round, where it got through the House, as you said, and it was like three votes short of coming to a full vote of the Senate, on the floor. And they think that, if indeed Obama wins and Fenty has this sort of promise, now it's not going to be Obama's first thing in office, or is it his 10th or 20th thing, but, at some point they will bring it forward again, and, there's an expectation that it will happen. Fenty's been, you know, pushed to sort of lobby Congress. He certainly has done so. He's gone up to the Hill to shake hands and get to, you know, sort of sit with people and explain why it's important to D.C. to get this vote in the House. You know, there's been a big effort. There's an independent body here called D.C. Vote that does a lot of stunts. You know, they throw the tea parties by the river, and they, you know, they do protests at the conventions. They don't really usually get a lot of attention, but they put pressure on. They try to sort of, you know, go after you know, senators and other folks who haven't supported them, and try to, you know, right now they're active and trying to drum up opposition to those folks. But whether it can actually happen, I mean, it's still a hurdle. But at this point, if it was a full Democratic sweep, I think they'd have the best shot that they've had in a long time.
I've been talking with David Nakamura, a D.C. city government reporter for The Washington Post, as part of our State of the Union series. So this one actually looking at a city that some people have proposed for statehood, although it probably wouldn't make much sense. After all, Washington has fewer than 600,000 residents. Mm-hmm. It makes it, I think, only Montana may have fewer residents.
They jokingly refer to ourselves as a colony, although it's obviously sarcastic and a little negative. But they're hoping for statehood here, so don't count them out.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Absolutely.